Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio on Wednesday nights at the new time, ladies and gentlemen, of 4 p.m. Pacific. And I think that's like getting into the 7 o'clock fancy news hour in the Eastern Seaboard time zone there. So that's good to know. And bear in mind, ladies and gentlemen, before we begin with our latest guest and special broadcast, I want to remind you that this is entirely done and entirely possible through your contributions and donations, a model which we've adopted not less because of somebody who drew our attention to the idea, which wasn't even his own idea. The man's name is James Corbett of the Corbett Report, and the idea was peer-to-peer economy, whereby somebody gives you money so that you can make content so that you don't have to compromise when you're shilling a product, right? You can just tell people the truth, and that's the ideal, isn't it? The unfortunate swing gate of that is you realize that people who donate for the purposes of telling the truth and getting the truth out there, when you actually do tell the truth, sometimes it's not the one that they wanted to hear, and then they stop donating. But you know, you win some, you lose some, you do what you can. James Corbett of the Corbett Report, after 10 years, welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Was this the third time we've had you on, mate?
I think that might be. And you're so right about that. I personally detest advertising in general, but specifically on news programs, I think it's particularly disgusting in that context, which is exactly why I think exactly peer-to-peer. We live in an economy where people can support the people that they think are bringing them important information, so why not do it that way? And it's weird because, of course, most people, I think, at least my audience tends to prefer that, but I actually had someone once accuse me of censorship because I'm not allowing advertising on my on my podcast, which is an odd way of thinking about it. but hey, I don't know. I guess some people prefer that. It reminds me, recently I was watching an old clip of Jim Garrison on the Tonight Show or whatever show Johnny Carson was hosting at that time. It was the late 1960s. And it was, it has to be seen to be believed, but it was this weird clip where they're talking about, obviously, the JFK assassination and all of this really heavy stuff. And Jim Garrison lays it out and he says something to the effect, yes, I believe it was a conspiracy that went to the highest levels of government to assassinate our president. And Johnny Carson's just like, I can't get on board with that. And then he turns to the camera and he's like, and if you're staying at a hotel, make it a Hilton hotel or whatever it is. Like, he does his advertisement at that moment. It's such a bizarre moment. And as soon as I saw that, I'm like, I have to put that in a documentary or something at some point. Cause it's so weird to go snip right into advertising mode at that exact moment.
And I also saw an interesting video recently by a guy named Bobby Burns. Normally does like just, you know, pop culture stuff referencing and movie reviews and whatnot. But he did this other interesting video that said how YouTubers manipulate their audiences. And I was like, okay, I'm going to actually have to watch this. And it's the sigh. Okay, you hear them and you see them all the time, and you're like deliberately trying to force some kind of emotional context into it before you start speaking. There's been a long time coming, and so on and so forth. When you've done your hair and everything like that, as if you know you just came up with it this second. It's like coming the F on, and then you realize that it's deeper than that when you're talking about manipulation techniques being used by YouTubers in the truth movement. I mean, you expect that in the normal world. And what people don't really expect, what I didn't expect first coming into the truth movement all those years ago, that you bring all the old habits, all the old deceptions and everything with you into it. And you just wind up having it reflected back to you a lot of the time.
Yeah,
well, how is it? I mean, possible to make a choice.
We're spearheading a new media form here, and I don't mean we, but I mean just generally. And yeah, to a certain extent, how do you do that? What does it look like? What does it sound like? Well, in, you know, when I was growing up, it was the newscaster at 6 p.m. reading you the news in the, you know, hushed tones is the serious way in which news has to be delivered. Obviously, that's changing. But when you're thinking, when you're starting out and you're trying to think how to do this, well, you tend to emulate what you know, what you've seen, what you have been taught to trust. And then how do you change that? And what do you, you know, how do you break those doors down? It's a difficult question, and one that I'm thinking about more recently, because I've recently been re-digging into Marshall McLuhan and The Medium is the Message and all that kind of contentious stuff, thinking about the way that information is delivered, to a certain extent determines what information is delivered.
Mm. Have you ever had somebody say to you, there's nothing you can say that could convince me, or something like that, and then the next moment you do say something and it actually does convince them because they had no idea the things that you knew, that and they have no idea how big their bubble of ignorance actually is?
I wish we don't know what we don't know, but
oh yeah.
I mean, well, I'm sure, look, let's put it this way. People encounter new information all the time. And I'm sure it does blow their mind in the privacy of their home when they're sitting there by themselves. But when you're in conversation with someone, to have that experience is extremely rare, because people have their defenses up and they have their, this is me and I know what I know and nothing you say is going to change it. To my mind, it's extremely, extremely difficult to change someone's mind in that context. The best you can do is feed them with information that later on they're going to go, I wonder if that's really true. And if they start searching it out for themselves, that might be the trip down the rabbit hole for them. But I get the sense that most people aren't changed on a dime like that, because we have these mental defenses and everyone has them. Yourself and myself and everyone who's listening right now. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, to have an identity of some sort is, I mean, we're human, we need that. So we have these barriers that we put up around, this is my identity and this is what I believe. And it doesn't blow over with the first wind, right? I mean, you have to really take it on board and you have to really think about, okay, so if that's wrong, then that must be wrong. So why do I believe that? And that's a process that doesn't happen, you know, every day. And if it does, that's probably a sign of some sort of psychic problem of some sort.
One can only hope. There is, however, an interesting thing. It's called prefacing, right? If you preface what you say in the right way, you can actually bring down people's defenses before they receive the information. And there's one time in a bar, actually, there was this guy who was a voter for a mainstream political party, and knew who I was, and instantly very against me. And I go, well, hold on one second, let's agree on a few rules here. First of all, I'm not going to assume anything that's inside your head. You're not going to assume anything that's inside mine. We're both going to behave in a gentlemanly-like fashion, operating under the belief that through honesty and communication, we can understand each other better. Do you agree to these principles of interaction? He did. And became friends like that. All right? And that's somebody with a preconceived notion of who I am and not liking me and not liking any of my views, instantly being brought down a peg to be able to receive some of them.
Yeah.
Now, is that not the perfect and ideal situation? Doesn't happen every day. It's only really happened that once. But imagine that. If you can go in and say, know your audience, read the room, and then you'll actually be able to preface what you're about to say the right way.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm a big believer in having messages tailored for a given audience in a given context. So, you know, I mean, if I'm giving a speech to a crowd of people that is going to be hostile to what I think, it's obviously going to be different than giving a speech to a crowd of people that are receptive to what I think, which is going to be different from giving one-on-one or having a one-on-one discussion with someone. And, you know, it's always going to be a slightly different discussion depending on the context of it. And I think you're right. There are certain things, there are ways that people can approach it that are going to be confrontational and in your face. And there are ways that people can approach it that are going to be less confrontational and more inclusive. And I don't think it's necessarily a one-size-fits-all, you know, this approach is always better kind of thing. I think sometimes some people do need confrontation in their face to get them shocked out of their belief system. That can be effective with certain people in the right context, in the right way, you know, with all the other caveats. So for me, it always boils down to, this is me, this is the way I communicate. There are going to be people who respond to that well. There are going to be people who hate the way I talk or look or think or whatever. And I can't control that. All I can do is be me. And I can't try to pretend to be someone else in each situation so that I can, you know, resonate with everyone. No one's going to communicate with everyone perfectly all the time. So I think you just have to resign yourself to that and just be authentically who you are. And that's what I try to do. And, you know, I mean, I've had some success with it over the years.
Well, you've been going after the individual who can think. And I remember coming out of a documentary once that my friend made, and I said, bro, it's a really good documentary. But the reason why there weren't so many people in the theater, why? And it says, because you made it for intelligent people. Right? And I'm starting to see this now happening in the truth movement to a large degree, that people are starting to get wary to the fact that if you dumb down your content to a certain degree and you introduce emotion, hype, and certain manipulative techniques, you can get a larger audience, which you can then milk for your advertisers and so on and so forth. Now, has it compromised the message? In some cases, I think it really has, right? Like the whole Trump phenomenon kind of thing. And it's like, after he's elected, oh, who are the possible people going to be in his cabinet? Okay, now I'll start paying attention to the election after it's all said and done, because before then it's all fluff. Freemasons, Trilateral Commission, Yale School and Skull and Bones and so on and so forth. A whole cabinet full to the brim with them. And I'm like, the New World Order just took over the truth movement. That's what I saw happen.
Yeah. Can I just clarify something that you were saying there for a second? Because I know you don't mean this, but I think clearly the use of emotion, connecting to people on an emotional level, is not the same as dumbing down a message. I think there can be, in fact, it can be important to bring in the emotional level of all of this, because people are obviously going on an emotional journey when they go through this sort of information. But clearly there is a way to do it well, and then there are ways that are just clearly manipulative and kind of, I want to force this emotion into you, and generally fear, unfortunately, in the truth movement areas, it's generally fear that is used as the emotional manipulative tool, which is the lowest form of emotional manipulation, I think, because people respond to it, and it can be very popular. It can certainly get people's attention. There will never be a time in history where you can't get people interested in something that they you should be afraid of this. So that's unfortunate. But yes, you're right. On the Trump phenomenon specifically, so all of these people who have spent all of these years or decades in some cases talking about all of the manipulation that goes on into these government institutions, and how it's really the CFR and the bankers and whatever that are running the show, but suddenly this savior appears from on high and everything changes, even though he appoints all the exact same swamp dwellers directly into his cabinet. It's bizarre. I don't want to psychoanalyze people, because I can't read the hearts and minds of men, but I do know that people, I think there's a lot of different factors that go into this, one of which is the bandwagoning. And it's just easier to ride a bandwagon than it is to go against it. And no one's going to fault you for jumping on the bandwagon. Maybe they will a few years down the road, but by that point you can move on to something else. So, it's like a moving target. But it's easier to be part of the winning team. Don't you want to be on the winning team? And I understand, you know, how people get sucked into that. It's very unfortunate. But it is just part of this. It's interesting.
Interesting you mentioned the words don't be sucked into that, because I just watched an anti-fascist propaganda piece from the American War Department in the 50s called Don't Be a Sucker. And it talked about how the Nazis used fear of immigrants and people stealing their jobs and foreign corporations and other people of religious groups and little secret societies and stuff like that, and manipulating manipulated and divided everybody against each other, turned them all against each other so that they could destroy them one by one, and then took over the country. And I'm like, that's exactly the same fucking thing that just happened. Oh my God. And I just watched it happen. And there was nothing I could do, bro. Nothing I could do. People will believe in him. Now he's going to make America great again. No, he's not. He's not. He's part of the same control system. The very people who taught you about this control system are now telling you that to elect a person who is part of it. Do you not see that they've been incorporated into the control system? I just had to get that out. I'm sorry.
I hear you. I feel it. Well, it's interesting to me how there's all these different cards that they have in their little tool chest, the Trump bandwagon jumpers, as to any action that he does, that you can defend it using one of these cards. One of the cards is, for example, Mnuchin is Goldman Sachs, ex-Goldman Sachs, Soros-connected skull and bonesman. You want your friends close, but your enemies closer. There you go. That's the get out of jail free card for that type of thing. Or he bombs Syria. It's because, he's just doing this as a message to China. It's not really about Syria. Or whatever it is, there's always an excuse. And it's interesting to me. It's like people have suddenly discovered nuance. And it's something that I actually put into my documentary on Obama at the end of the Obama presidency. I had a little documentary, Obama, Legacy of Ashes, where I said in there, one of the lines was something to the effect that when people were voting for the Hope and Change in 2008, you know, obviously, this is the man, he's going to change the system, everything's going to change. And then in 2016, those same people will go, well, he was just one man. You know, he's up against the whole system. How is he going to change it? Exact same phenomenon now. Make America great again. Everything's going to change. And then when nothing really changes, well, he's just one man. You know, he's up against the deep state. How is he going to change it all? Well, that's the exact point. That's the exact point. Even if he was a saint, which he is not, but even if he was a saint, he couldn't change this system because it is the system that is the problem.
Well, I was overjoyed when a friend of mine publishes a magazine called Uncensored. Gave me the new issue because he'd been talking about Trump, you know, being able to do stuff and get stuff done. And then he comes out with this issue of Uncensored and it says, Trump's sellout, why he betrayed the movement that got him elected. And I was like, good on you, bro, good on you. It's like, you know, it's good to see when people actually see the truth and really just sort of take it on board and run with it, you know, because it's been so easy to see through, but the problematic agency of the Trump presidency is the alternative media that got him elected, which we now know to either be dishonest or the most incompetent journalists in the world that have ever freaking existed. Possibly both.
Yeah. The weird thing to me is that even people like in the alt media who didn't fall for it and understood this still tend to give Trump the benefit of the doubt. It's always framed in the sense that, oh yeah, he was right and he was saying these great things during the campaign about, you know, we don't want to get involved in the Middle East and things like that. But, you know, McMaster or whoever, you know, the swamp dwellers, you know, somehow they converted him or they co-opted his agenda or something. No. He was lying. He was just saying complete lies during the campaign trail because he knew that would be popular to get elected, like every other politician ever. Those were lies. Those were not deeply held beliefs of the peacemaker Donald Trump, you know? I mean, it's so weird to me that even his critics won't come out and say he was just another political scumbag that was lying.
Yeah, I think it was like 3 days after he got elected, I published my article, Congratulations, Order Followers, Trump's cabinet is filled with New World Order front men and dark occultists, right? And then a couple of people got me on my show, it was like, aren't you saying, I told you so a bit too soon, Vinny? It's like, no, I'm not. Okay, I'm just warning you ahead of time what is going to freaking happen. All right. It's like that scene in Minority Report when he rolls the ball along the desk and the guy catches it before it falls. You knew it was going to fall. You know how gravity works. We've seen this game before. But I think James, we needed to see the Bush presidency and the Obama presidency, two-term presidents back-to-back, in order to see that scheme work out and play out, I think, didn't we? I think maybe other people who haven't been following election cycles for 16 years, roughly, don't know about how the Bush presidency was originally stolen off Al Gore and all of that kind of stuff. Didn't know about the rhetoric that they were using. Didn't know how he got wars in order to get reelected. Didn't know about pipeline deals and didn't know 9/11 was an inside job until 6 months ago. You know, we're talking about people with a very, very small base of knowledge with which to garner their political fruit, as it were. Does it pass the squeeze test? And if Donald Trump was a watermelon, it would be the brownest, stinkingest, mushiest, most disgusting, fly-covered thing you've ever seen in your life. And it would be next to, you know, these other beautiful green watermelon, rock melon, you know, other pure fruit that's just sitting there. It's just this big, rotting, festering carcass that was once a fruit, that is there now only to poison everything that surrounds it, all right? That's just kind of what I see.
It's quite a vivid analogy. Point taken. And I think, I agree. I understand why 20-somethings, you know, that this is maybe their first or second go-around the election cycle, the selection cycle. They can get suckered in by it. They don't have the political kind of history or memory to be able to do this. I'm flabbergasted that people in their 30s or 40s who have been around and have seen some of this and know about 9/11 and things like that would ever get suckered into this. And I'm completely mystified by how people in their 50s or 60s who have been seeing this crap since wherever, Nixon or, you know, whenever, LBJ, have seen all of this time after time after time after time. The birdcage liner gets shat on and then thrown out, and that's how it happens every single time. And you think it's going to be any different with the next political messiah that comes along. I can't fathom how people still continue to get suckered by it.
Well, that said, we're entering into a different phase now, I think. Like, we've seen it before, but this is different. For example, if you look at the Trump presidency, you're looking at what would be considered in the popular thought base as an independent candidate initially, right? And I thought to myself, whoa. New World Order figured out they don't need to just control the left voting people and the right voting people, but they also need to give puppet meat string out there to all the people who know that there's a scam between that rift. That huge gulf has now gotten so big that I think the New World Order had to compromise their own election process publicly in order to get somebody like that elected, in order to back off all the public pressure. That'll buy them like at least 18 months of solid sitting back, doing nothing to stop the progress of the New World Order by everybody in the United States kind of thing. That's what I thought. That's what I'd do if I was a ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbag with more money and power than God, at least.
Yeah, I see that. And I think you're right. I think with every reiteration now, they're going to have to draw out something else from their bag of tricks. It was the smiling black man in 2008 that was it seemed the polar opposite to Bush. Of course, didn't turn out that way, but it seemed that way. And, I understand how people fell for it. And now 2016, here's Trump. He seems the polar opposite to Obama in every way possible. But hey, it's another billionaire, a mafia-connected insider billionaire. Yeah, he's on your side, guys. But yeah, I mean, again, I understand. It's the perception of independence. That's the perception they're playing with this time. And what will be the perception they play with in 2020 or 2024, the first woman president or whatever it is? But again, they'll draw something out of the bag of tricks so that people will get excited again.
Lewis Blank commented on how they were holding up Trump's business acumen as one of the great reasons why he'd be able to help America out. And then he went, bro, he bankrupted a casino. Okay? You don't need a better example of how someone's business acumen is not quite what you think it is. Do you know how you can get into $1 billion in debt and still be considered rich? If you're in that debt working for the mafia as a front man to run casinos where they launder their frickin' drug money. Maybe when your three best friends are known in certain circles as the world's worst human traffickers, gun runners, and drug traffickers. Right? Maybe that's the case. See, it was like, okay, it's just so obvious there. Now, on from the Trump presidency issue, how has this changed the political landscape within the truth community? I've seen it being split very, very strongly now, not in favor of Hillary, just all in favor of Trump, like the whole truth movement, pretty much 90% just straight on this Trump train. And then there's a 10% of people that are just like, no. And then there's maybe a little fraction of whatever. Oh, maybe Hillary would be better if she was going to die during a presidency from her health issues or something. It was just like, it's the weirdest choice we've ever been given. And I think it changed the entire landscape within the truth movement and how it moves politically. It was divided just masterfully.
Yeah. Well, certainly there have been divisions that have been brought out by this, but that's fine from my perspective, because I don't think there is a truth movement, but if there is, I don't think I'm part of it. I certainly wouldn't identify as being part of it. I think that concept may have existed around the 9/11 truth movement in the immediate wake of the, 2002, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. But at this point, what does that even mean? I mean, it's not even a useful label to describe anything, because if it can describe Trump wagon supporters and, other people, there's so many different issues. I'm not putting myself into any movement, and I'm not, a card-carrying member of any party or movement or anything. I am who I am, and I'm just going to say the way I see it. And the labels like that become counterproductive at a certain point. So it doesn't bother me. In fact, it might be a good thing overall to make people realize, oh, maybe there isn't a truth movement. Maybe it's just a bunch of people who have these different ideas, and maybe we have to individually sort our way through those ideas. And obviously I'm not saying I'm 100% right about everything, but I'm saying I'm going to call it the way I see it, and I don't care if there's some sort of orthodoxy or, you can't say that, or you must say this. I'm not going to bow down to anyone like that.
Mm. Well, I think of it more as the array, a base rejection of a lot of the mainstream consciousness would term the truth movement, the global movement towards truth, which is, as you can see from many major polls in every single direction that you look, majority of people in Germany think that 9/11 was an inside job, or that the government isn't telling people enough. And that's big signs in many different ways that you can say that the, at least populations are waking up in some grade. But I agree that there's no movement per se. However, I think it's a leaderless, factionless movement of humanity towards truth in some way, or rather moving what it thinks is the opposite direction to the mainstream lie and narrative. That's what I kind of mean and reckon by it. And likewise, conspiracy theorists mean something different to me than it does to the CIA. I think it means a person who believes, absolutely believes with total conviction, you can't convince them otherwise, that powerful people who have a lot of influence are prone to using their power to maintain and grow that influence. A coincidence theorist, on the other hand, is somebody who thinks everything happens by sheer coincidence, politically, in business, everything. There's no such thing as collusion, backroom deals, or scumbaggery. Right? Now, it's a delusional state of being, that kind of thing. But it highlights this one particular issue. Are we willing to question ourselves and what we think is true once in a while or not?
Yeah. And that goes back to, I think, what we were saying earlier about the construction of our identity and how it's very difficult to get past people's defenses that they erect around that identity. And that's equally true for people who consider themselves part of a truth movement or whatever you want to call it, as it is for normies or whatever you want to call them. I tend to stay away from the sheeple kind of tags and all of that really divisive and stuff because, hey, if that's the case, then I was absolutely there, you know, a decade ago. Before I started getting into all of this. So I don't want to dehumanize people in that sense. But yes, and I think it is an ever-going, ongoing process of questioning assumptions. And again, no one's going to be 100% right about everything and, you know, never able to fundamentally question what it is they believe. But at the same time, we need a good, solid process for at least discovering the ground-level truths of our base assumptions. I think it's almost more about the process than it is about the facts or the determinations that we come to, because if you have that process in place, you can continue to apply it to beliefs. You can continue to question what it is you believe and why you believe it, and that way it's more about the process of getting towards truth, because again, no, I don't think anyone has the 100% omniscient perspective, the knowledge that would be necessary to say, I know the truth about X, Y, and Z in their totality. But if we have that process in place, we can at least always be getting closer to it. And this was reflected in a podcast episode I did recently about the Glass-Steagall Act, as it's called. And the fact that I completely went along with the narrative that I'd heard for many, many years about Glass-Steagall was this great government regulation that kept commercial and investment banking separate, and when that was repealed in 1999, then it all went to hell, and 2008 collapse happened in, you know, XYZ, connect the dots. And I never questioned that, I never looked into it, until I did. And then I realized, oh wait, it's actually much more complicated than that, and there is actually no direct through line from X to Z there. I don't know how I did that. And so once you, again, absolutely everything can be questioned, and once you get to those base assumptions, you might start to reformulate it. And sometimes that does involve an identity change. Sometimes it just means, okay, now I have to adjust it and think of it this way. And it's interesting to see the way people will defend things, even when they know them to be incorrect.
There was a New Zealand guy who just gave... Oh, I was so great to see this, James, and it was really good to my heart because I've been doing this like alone for a long, long friggin' time. So, first of all, it was a New Zealand scientist, a very renowned scientist, giving a public meeting with slides and everything about chemtrail geoengineering in New Zealand. And I was like, oh, first time I've ever seen anything like that. Second really great moment, somebody actually filmed it and uploaded it for other people to see. But not just that, they actually edited it too, and then put his slideshow in artificially so it wouldn't be all fuzzy like it is when you normally film the slideshow. And I just gave him a big like, gave him a subscribe, put a big comment on there, just thank you for doing what you're doing and doing all of that kind of thing. Now, what he said during this thing was he talked about this dynamic whereby the more you don't know about something, the more you think you know about it. So if somebody knows nothing about chemtrail geoengineering or whatever, they'll say, nah, that's a hoax, that's complete bollocks or whatever, and they'll be absolutely sure that what they're saying is true because they don't know what they're talking about. And that same dynamic happens everywhere you look. People who don't know what they're talking about, who are absolutely sure of something they know nothing about. And this interesting dynamic is it's all pervasive in every single thing. And when I interviewed Jeff Doherty, the Christian whistleblower, we talked about how it's so important to know about your own blind sides. I mean, he talks specifically about the religious blind side within the alternative media, who are willing to be manipulated by church doctrine and things of this nature, which was made up by the Romans to make people subservient slaves to an overlord class, right? And it's just like, dude, if you're going through the quest for truth, sometimes you also need to know the truth about your own beliefs, where they came from, how you got indoctrinated into them. Were you young? Were you very tired? Were they speaking very, very slowly, almost in the same pace as the human heart? Was there fluorescent lighting? Was there repetition involved? These are mind control programs, right? And the greatest part about being part of a mind control program is that you don't know you're a part of it. That's a very scary realization that I think everybody needs to come to in their own time.
Indeed. Yes. Yeah. So
that religious element within the so-called, you know, truth movement. Okay. Are we being blinded to it? And this huge war that is now being cooked up and conjured, this Christians versus Muslims, even though the Muslims that you're going after are ISIS, which are really US special forces who have nothing to do with Islam. And then you've got a whole bunch of other people in the Christian right media just going, these people are so freaking dangerous. And the fear has gotten up so to such high levels. And then you've got all these false flag attacks coming out constantly to reinforce that narrative. Be afraid, hype this kind of war up. And you're like, oh, my God. What's going on here? What are they trying to cover up? What are they trying to conceal with this division here?
Right. Well, we have to go back to the Clash of Civilizations idea that has been implanted by CFR critters for 2.5 decades at least. I mean, before all of this started, at the fall of the Soviet Union, they started talking about the Clash of Civilizations and the remaking of World Order. It was Samuel Huntington who wrote the book, but Bernard Lewis and others have been talking about it before that point. And so we have been, I think, slowly prepared for this for a very long time. And again, you don't have to go very far into the archives to discover how the soil was prepared for that, obviously with Huntington's book in the early 90s. And then in the late 90s, you can see in the CFR's Foreign Affairs Journal, you see the various preparatory parts about the Al-Qaeda myth being laid out in Foreign Affairs. And there, I mean, for example, that article that was co-authored by the 9/11 Commission Executive Director, whose name is going to escape me off the top of my head, I know it, but anyway, he co-authored that report that was talking about, well, if something happened like, oh, I don't know, Osama bin Laden destroyed the World Trade Center, this is the way it would reshape America. So we've seen that soil being prepared for decades, and this is the inevitable point that we're reaching. And then, of course, they use their military wars of aggression in the Middle East to create the destabilization, to create the mass flow of people that becomes this mass migration that they then also use as this, you know, divide and conquer wedge that they can use to further terrorize the people. And this time, willingly, you know, in the people's name. We need the police state, we need the government, we need, you know, the intelligence agencies to save us from these Muslim hordes. It's amazing how it all works out on every level for the people who want to centralize control. And again, I think it goes back to what we talked about earlier, fear as being perhaps the most effective form of emotional manipulation. If you can get people fearing, then you can get people to discard everything that they believed or everything that all the principles and ideals that they hold, as long as you keep me safe from the bad boogeymen. And unfortunately, that works even on people who like to pretend to claim to be on the truth side of things. They're now falling for this particular wedge in record numbers. And you can see it. You can see it in people who are now advocating for the very police state that they used to make documentaries arguing against.
it's almost like a prepared script the alternative media sort of going from this anti-authoritarian, pro-libertarian, pro-truth of all facets and natures to pro-authoritarian, pro-fascism, and essentially censoring a large amount of the truth. And it's quite interesting to see the dynamic, how it's like a bell curve, you know, it goes up and then it goes down.
Yeah, draw people in with a convincing narrative using the truth, and then redirect that truth. It's a jujitsu move of some sort, and it's unfortunately extremely effective, because a lot of people have gotten their identity invested in this media personality or in this idea of a movement to the point where now they can't differentiate themselves from that. And so, the herd is moving this way now. I guess I have to move that way too. It's interesting that, the first insult that people come up with is sheeple, to talk about people who don't know about 9/11 truth or something, but you really think there isn't a herd movement in the truth movement as well? You don't think there's that kind of impulse going on?
Well, they never heard about that. God, that was a terrible pun for me. You just...
You've had better, but I appreciate it.
As I say, there's only one thing worse than the New World Order: the jokes of Vinnie Eastwood. Now, the alternative element I wanted to get into here is about how not only is it very interesting that you actually made exactly the same point that I wanted to make, and I just shut up and let you make it, about people making their own mind up and not trust a figurehead, all right, and not follow somebody blindly. It doesn't matter who it is. Everybody can be compromised. Everybody can be wrong. There are infinite possibilities in this universe. Never, ever, ever just put your stake down and go, this is my belief structure now. I will never reconsider it or whatever. You know, put your stake in the ground and fight for your beliefs, but don't allow them to not be challenged. All right. I remember one time I got in an argument with one of my listeners when I questioned his logic, and he goes, don't you ever question my logic again. And it's just like, is it logical to never question logic, though, Brody? He's like, get out of here. As I like to say, history makes hypocrites of us all.
It certainly works out that way, doesn't it? And, think of how many media personalities, alternative or otherwise, you know of, that include caveats and include, well, I don't know this, so this could change things, or puts those types of things into their work. And how many of them just say, this is it, this is the way it is, this is the truth, and if you don't believe it, you're a sucker. Obviously, the latter one is much more popular. That's the way people... And it's because it's the way that people are trained to think. Oh, this guy knows what he's talking about. Look at it, listen to, you know, he's 100% sure, so...
A caveat on that. It's not that's how they were trained to think. It's that they weren't trained to think.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. They were trained not to think, maybe. But at any rate,
it's just like, so the thing we were talking about in the beginning of the broadcast is when how you go from your old, you know, quote unquote sheeple life into the quote unquote truth movement, and you don't realize that you are actually still the exact same person. It's just now you think that this is the thing to blindly follow. It's not about that. Just because you quit the Church of Satan doesn't mean becoming a born again anti-gay bashing Christian is going to be the best course of the moves. Maybe the truth is somewhere in the center. Maybe it's usually a little bit more gray. Maybe somebody can't give you all the truth that you want in a 30-second soundbite. Maybe it's a little bit harder to make up your mind. Maybe
that's an important point. That's such an important point because, again, I think I said this before we started recording, but I've been going through Marshall McLuhan and Medium is the Message kind of thing recently. And of course, part of that idea is the medium shapes the message that comes out. You can't convey certain ideas or you have certain types of thoughts because it is a visual medium or what have you. On the internet now with Twitter and with these YouTube viral, 2-minute videos, it really is rewiring people's minds to expect these extremely truncated statements that then because of the comment sections or the social media discussion that goes on, is always about just kind of discussing, critiquing, and, oh, you didn't say this, you didn't mention this, to the point where it is becoming more and more difficult to formulate a thought, because there are the 800,000 different parts of that that people are going to say, are going to say, oh, you didn't say this, you didn't say that, you didn't bring in this context, to the point where it's becoming more difficult to have a real communication, I think, through this internet medium. And again, I think that's something that we're figuring out, and it's not necessarily a fault of any person involved in that conversation. It is the nature of the conversation we're having, but it does lead to that. Again, it does prioritize people who have the very straightforward, very, you know, ABC through line that this is the facts and this is what you should believe. And I think the most insidious part of that is that I am becoming more and more pessimistic. I've always known that people are not fundamentally rational and they do not go on evidence alone. It's a whole series of things. It's emotion and belief systems and all of this. But I'm becoming even more pessimistic about the ability of facts to change people's understanding of the world, because I see it more and more in my own work. For example, I recently had something up about the JFK myth. The idea that JFK was about to end the Fed. He was going to end the Fed, everybody. Look, he was doing these silver certificates as a way, because he was going to stop, you know, the Federal Reserve printing money and all of this. Which, you know, if you kind of glance with one eye a little bit over the Executive Order 11110, it kind of looks like it might be like that. When you actually look at it and look at what that executive order says and what it was actually changing and in what context it was, and you look at the other statements that he made in 1963 and you look at what ultimately was happening and ended up happening, you find out it was the exact opposite. He was specifically, and in his own words, trying to end the use of silver as a monetary instrument by the U.S. Treasury, so that they could, and he specifically brought in Federal Reserve notes in denominations of $1, that he was trying to get the Federal Reserve more involved in the monetary system, the exact opposite of this Federal Reserve myth that everyone parrots and that I've probably said somewhere in the past. And when I brought that to people's attention and laid out the documents, look at his economic report from 1963, where he says he's going to do this, and then he signs this act on this day at the same time as he signs this executive order, blah, blah, blah. Fact A, fact B, fact C, fact D. Look at these facts. They're exact opposite of what you believe. Then I get some people, not everyone, but some people attacking me, saying, oh, so you're saying that Oswald killed Kennedy? No. No, I'm not saying that. That doesn't follow at all. I'm saying that what people are saying about him ending the Fed is 100% wrong. That does not mean that Oswald killed Kennedy, he was a lone nut, you know, everything's right with the assassination story. Those two are not logically connected. It's a complete logical leap that makes absolutely no sense, but again, it's someone trying to protect their worldview and trying to protect their identity. I have said this in the past. I have been on this, you know, this, I've planted my flag on this hill, I'm going to die on it. And so anyone who's saying anything against it must be 100% against me and everything I believe. So I'm becoming more and more pessimistic about the ability to really change people's understanding through facts and evidence. There are people who are just never going to really let that penetrate their consciousness.
Well, it's said that being jaded and cynical, the two signs that someone is an actual journalist, because they see things and they don't lie to themselves about it, what they're seeing. You know, it gets to that point sometimes, I admit as well. So one thing that gave me hope was what Dr. Rima Labo told me about this concept called the seventh man. First person comes up to you and tells you something contrary to your popular, your very, very strongly held belief. No, fuck off. You're a conspiracy theorist. But if seven people, not you saying the same thing seven times, but seven different people come up to that same person and say more or less the same thing that goes completely counter to their very strongly held belief, that's usually the tipping point that they'll start to consider changing that belief. Now, what that works out in a practical thing I call the information grenade. You pull the pin, you chuck it in, you tell them the facts, and you hope it blows up in their face later. You don't have any responsibility of whether they wake up, and I think that's the part of the reason why truthers and so on and so forth got so frustrated about telling the truth or everything, because they expected, because they had facts, that people would believe them.
No. Social proof is extremely important. And if people want to check that out, go to YouTube and type in First Follower and watch the video that comes up. There's this viral video. It's at some music festival or something. Everyone's just sitting on the grass listening to some music. There's a guy who gets up and starts doing this crazy dance. And so people are kind of snickering and laughing at him. Look at how crazy he looks. But then someone gets up and starts dancing with him. And it's fun, and everyone's laughing. And then more people start coming, and more, until everybody's up and doing this crazy dance. And the point is, it wasn't the guy doing the crazy dance that changed people's opinion. It was the first person to get up and do it with him. And people see that, and they see, oh, okay, it's okay to join in on this. I mean, it's not something to laugh at and be and kind of hold to the side. Oh, we can join in. Let's go. And so it's the first follower who changes the dynamic and creates the tide. And I think that's an important thing. There's absolutely an element of social proof that is necessary for people to go out on a limb and say something that they at least they feel, this is crazy, this is taboo, you can't say this, oh my god, no, 9/11 was inside job, that's crazy, you can't say that. And so they need to see that social proof in other people. And I think of that as one of the things that my podcast is doing, or tries to do, is to be the person out there to say the things that other people are thinking, to let them know they're not alone, they're not in crazy, they're not out on a limb by themselves, that there are other people out there. And I get that feedback from people a lot, that, you know, thank you for doing what you do, because I can see there's someone else out there that's like me. It's an important thing for people. It's not just the facts and the details themselves, it's that someone else sees them. That I'm not alone. And that's one of the most effective control techniques of the mainstream, is that they get you to believe you are alone. No one thinks like you. People laugh at you. You're weird. You're crazy. You're out on a limb. You're a conspiracy theorist. No. It's the exact opposite. And whenever we get a chance to actually prove that to people, whenever we get a fair playing field on any medium, it's messages like these ones that come to the fore and start to rise until they start to jigger the algorithms and try to keep them suppressed. But I really do have hope in that much anyway, that there are a lot more people out there with these beliefs than would ever let on in some sort of generic, social situation, because people are always afraid that I'm the crazy one, I'm the only one who sees the emperor has no clothes.
It's what I call the Ron Paul voter effect. There was a meeting in Austin, Texas, and somebody asked, are there any Ron Paul voters in the room? And it was just a normal, thing. And about 90% of the hands went up. And they were like, whoa, we had no idea that there was this unknown congressman who was like being deleted from the media and being artificially put in fourth place when he won major straw polls and things like that, had so much support. And it reminds me of something that Bill Hicks once said. He said the mainstream media is there to make you think like you're crazy, because you see the BS right in front of you, and something on a gut level tells you that it's bull. But because you don't hear your voice of reason reflected back to you, it makes you start to wonder if you're the one who's crazy, rather than society and the people who are running it. James Corbett from the CorbettReport.com, thank you very much for joining me here on the Vinny Eastwood Show. And,
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And I think that last point is such an important point that I hope people take away from this, is that you are not alone. And don't be afraid to call out the emperor when he has no clothes, because you'll be surprised how many people actually agree with you.
All right. Donate at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and AmericanFreedomRadio.com if you care. See you again sometime, folks. Thanks, James.